Welcome to the Movie Planet, Season 5, Episode 2. This week we're talking about 1986's The Fly. With Joe.
Oh, look at this. What's this?
I don't know. I seem to be stricken by a disease with a purpose, wouldn't you say?
And Sam.
You've got to get some help. I think you must be sick.
You're jealous!
I've become free. I've been released, and you can't stand it.
I'm your host, Joe, and with me is the Staphus Borans to my Brundlefly, Sam.
How's it going?
It feels good. This is a virgin movie for you.
This is, again.
Yeah. Was the last one? Poltergeist was also,
Poltergeist
right?
Poltergeist, too.
Yeah. Wow, I'm just kind of taking you down a lane here.
Exactly.
Welcome to the 80s lane.
Keep it coming.
Yeah, these are the movies that your father would not let you watch.
Yes. Very true.
Now, the horror, this week, we're doing The Fly. Sam has nominated The Fly from 1986. Now, the higher the grade we give this movie, the longer it may be staying there. Only a film with a higher grade can kick it out on its ass from the Pantheon in the future. So, we will discuss the movie, and in an hour or so, we will analyze it and grade it and figure out if we need to boot a movie out. Now, this is a spoiler-rich podcast, so if you haven't seen 1986's The Fly, chances are you have not thrown up lately. It's best if you stop right here, watch the movie, and then turn us back on to enjoy our discussion and analysis. But now that we have handled that business, let's get to our movie of the week.
This week, we're talking about 1986's The Fly, a rated R movie directed by David Cronenberg. This was a remake of the 1958 The Fly. The movie was made for between $9 to $15 million and brought in a whopping $40.4 million at the domestic box office in 1982. According to the Box Office Mojo, adjusted for inflation, that's $100.1 million.
Oh, it's so good.
Thank you, Joe. And approximately 10.9 million tickets.
That's the 100.1 million now. That's kind of nice now for a horror film, especially one that's like body horror like this.
Oh, for sure. This isn't just your classic average scare, anxiety kind
of
thing. This is a slow burn in like transformation.
That's why I was like, is Sam going to be into this one?
Oh, totally.
I don't know. So, okay. So who's in this fun flick?
So small cast, but it's starring Jeff Goldblum as Seth Brundle. Gina Davis as Veronica Ronnie.
That's Quaif, not Queef.
Glad you cleared that up for me before I said it. John Getz is Stannis Baratheon.
Stannis Baratheon.
Joy Bushell is Tawny. Leslie Carlson as Dr. Brent Cheevers. George, not even...
Chuvalo.
Chewbacca as Marky. And David Cronenberg, the director himself, as the gynecologist.
Yep. Now, this is a pretty small cast.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people in this, but it's kind of funny. The Cronenberg thing about him being the gynecologist, apparently he had dinner with some director, and he was like, wow, you know, you got plastic surgeon looks. And at the time, he was like, okay, I'll be the doctor then in this film.
Now, according to our good people at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a tomato meter. According to our good people at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a tomato meter rating of 91%, 52 fresh reviews, 5 rotten.
It's pretty high.
That's really high.
Yeah.
The critics on average gave this film an 8.3 out of 10, which I think is very fair.
I do too.
The audience score, which is the average rating the audience gave this film, is a 3.4 out of 5.
Boo!
With an 83% agreeing it's a 3 or higher.
You all suck.
Don't know what you're talking about.
All right, a little making of this move.
Don't get on the set, get ready to shoot, and then ask for rewrites. Studios do this crap all the time, and they wonder why they end up with a shit movie.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Movie? You know, I hate the word movie. I don't make movies. I make films.
In the early 1980s, it's kind of funny who's one of the producers of this film. Co-producer Kip Omen approached screenwriter Charles Edward Pogue with the idea of remaking the classic science fiction horror The Fly from 1958. Have you ever seen this one?
No.
Okay. I believe it's on Netflix.
Cool.
Yeah, you can check it out. It is. It's actually a really good movie. Most of it's done, though, from the standpoint of the female in it. She's kind of the lead in it because the male changes immediately into a fly and you don't know it. Yeah, he's got like a hood over his head and everything. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, cool.
Pogue began by reading George Langelon's short story and then watching the original film, which he had never seen.
And the short story, is it pretty much the same
As the 1958? Yeah.
Okay, as the 1988 version.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Woo! Deciding that this was a project in which he was interested, he talked with producer Stuart Cornfield about setting up the production, and Cornfield very quickly said, yes, please, I want to. The duo then pitched the idea to executives at 20th Century Fox, now Disney, and received an enthusiastic response, and Pogue was given money to write a first draft screenplay, and he initially wrote an outline similar to that of Langolan's story. But both he and Cornfield thought that it would be better to rework the material to focus on a gradual metamorphosis instead of an instantaneous monster. However, when executives read the script, they were so unimpressed that they immediately withdrew from the project. And after some negotiation, Cornfield orchestrated a deal whereby Fox would agree to distribute the film if he could set up financing through another source. So Fox wouldn't give him the money, but they were like, but we'll still distribute it.
I just read ahead. I'm sorry.
The new producer was Mel Brooks. Yes, that Mel Brooks. Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles is Mel Brooks. And the film was to be produced by his company, Brooks Films. It's in the very first few lines on the screen. A Mel Brooks film.
I was out of the room when it started. Shit.
Cornfield gave the script to Brooks, who liked it and felt that a different writer was needed. So Pogue was then removed from the project, and Cornfield hired Waylon Green for a rewrite. But it was felt that his draft was not in step with the right direction, so Pogue was then brought back on to polish the material. I would hate to be a screenwriter.
This is going to be insulting.
Just get dicked around all day long, every day. At the same time, Mel Brooks and Cornfield were trying to find a suitable director. Now, their first choice was David Cronenberg. But he was working on an adaptation of Total Recall for Dino De Laurentiis, who ended up doing that movie? It was the same guy that did Spaceship Troopers and Basic Instinct. Van der Hoeven.
Paul Verhoeven.
Verhoeven. There we go. Verhoeven ended up doing it. So he's unable to accept. Cronenberg says, I can't. I'm working on Total Recall. Cornfield decided on a young British director named Robert Bierman after seeing one of his short films. Bierman was flown to Los Angeles to meet with Pogue, and the film was in the very early stages of pre-prod when tragedy struck. Bierman's family had been vacationing in South Africa, and his daughter was killed in an accident. So Bierman boarded a plane to go to his family, and Brooks and Cornfield waited for a month before approaching him about resuming work. It was actually 3 months. They gave him 3 months, and Bierman, at the time, they did an interview with him on the behind the scenes, and he's sitting there going, I knew I could not do this film, and I kept telling Mel Brooks, I can't, and he goes, I'll give you more time, sit on it, I'll give you more time. So Brooks pretty much waited this thing out and pushed production. They really liked Bierman. So Bierman told him he couldn't commit to the project, and Brooks told him that he understood and had freed him from his contract, no strings attached, just said, go deal with your family. What a nice guy this guy is. Brooks left his name off the credits so as people would not go to a movie expecting what one would expect from a Mel Brooks film.
Oh, that's smart.
Yet now, his name is on the top there. It says Mel Brooks.
Sure.
Or it says Brooks Films, I think. Yeah.
Brooks Film.
Yeah. Cornfield then heard that Cronenberg was no longer associated with Total Recall and once again approached him with The Fly. And Cronenberg agreed to sign on as a director if he would be allowed to rewrite the script. And thank God he did. Seth Brundle's increasing mania and personality changes in the early stages of the transformation were emphasized in the rewrites, and the notion of the transformation itself being a horrible disease became a key factor in the new script. Smart move. Also in this version, Brundle was clearly transforming into a bizarre hybrid creature as the result of a genetic fusion, whereas in Pogue's version, Powell was being taken over by the fly cells, which had been absorbed into his body, thus slowly turning him into a literal giant fly, which I think if they remade this movie today, if they were ballsy enough to try to do this, they would go with the full-on fly.
All right, let's go, Disney. Come on.
I don't want
Give it
a,
to me.
I don't want a remake of this.
The Disney's It's the Fly.
Perfect the way it is. It would be all CGI now anyway.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Cronenberg's version also retains such moments as Brundle catching a fly in midair, the fingernail pulling, and the maggot baby dream. And that maggot still looks good! Which was moved to an earlier point in the story and used for thematic and plot purposes, blah, blah, blah. Now, there was a monkey cat. The monkey cat, yes. Of Pogue's script. This was apparently midway through all the testing. He takes a baboon and morphs it with a cat to get them to switch at the same time. Instead, they become one, and it attacks him. As the fly, it attacks him.
Okay.
And he kills this monkey cat.
Yeah.
And apparently, people were so pissed off about this. They're like, test audience, they're like, can't do that. You cannot kill an animal like that. You just can't. He was like, it's a fly.
It's a giant.
Yeah, Fly. This is a you're going animal rights on me now. So yeah, that had to be taken out. There was also a part where a bag lady's murdered by Jeff Goldblum in an alley, and Cronenberg revised that this so that the woman was killed by vomit drop. Despite the extensive rewrite of Pogue's script, Cronenberg insisted during Writers Guild arbitrations that he and Pogue share screenplay credit, since he felt that his version could not have come to pass without Pogue's script to serve as a foundation. So, with a script that everyone approved of, Cronenberg assembled his usual crew and began the process of casting the picture, ultimately deciding on Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis for the leads. Chris Wallace had designed the creatures in Gremlins and was hired to handle the film's extensive special effects. In a 1987 interview on Sinister Image, Vincent Price, who was in the original Fly, revealed that when this remake was released, Jeff Goldblum wrote a letter saying, "I hope you like it as much as I liked yours." And Price was touched by the letter, and he composed a reply and went to see the film, which he described as wonderful right up to a certain point. It went a little too far. Now, here's my favorite thing. Michael Keaton was offered the role of Seth Brundle, but he declined. And this was originally a project for Tim Burton to direct. I imagine that they met in an alleyway afterwards.
Really, really glad Tim Burton had nothing to do with this.
With Burton saying to Keaton, "Hey, flies may not work, but how do you feel about bats?" Da, 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 da. Okay. This is 86. 89 was right around the corner for a movie made. Yeah. So they could have met on this very location. Richard Dreyfuss, Mel Gibson, and John Lithgow all auditioned for the lead role and turned it down. Jeff Goldblum.
Sucks.
This is great. This is what I love about Hollywood is that Jeff Goldblum just, you know, can I, maybe? Yeah. You seem like a fly. Yes.
All right. Do you remember the first time you saw this?
Well, yes, I do. I was 11 or 12 at the time. We had these family movie nights, and my parents got some ice cream. It was green pistachio ice cream. It's delicious, by the way. And we watched this movie. And I remember I was sitting on the farthest couch from the TV. I had the ice cream bowl on me, and I remember getting sick after watching Brundle Fly show on camera. This is how Brundle Fly eats. But that's not what made me sick, because that shot goes straight to Stathis watching it on his TV, and all you hear is the slurping.
Oh, yeah.
And I into my ice cream bowl. Yeah, it was not fun. I could never eat that ice cream again. I can't eat pistachio ice cream, because all I think of is the fly now. It was awful. And every time I watch that scene, it gets more and more disgusting, because all I hear is hell no. What about you, Sam?
I mean, if there was a mention of it or seeing it at Blockbuster, my dad would make a weird, like weird out shaky gesture and just say it was gross. And obviously it was rated R, so I wasn't allowed to watch it. And then I just never got around to it. I actually just watched it for yesterday for the first time, and what a treat.
What a treat indeed. What a treat. I'm thrilled that you liked it, actually. I was worried because I know Poltergeist didn't get you the right way that I thought it would. This one, around the same time period, wouldn't get you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, what else is going on?
How about a summary in 10 words or less?
All right. Man screws with nature. Man becomes nature. Woman kills nature.
Very good. I like it.
What about you?
Motion sick man creates machine, turns into fly, whoopsie daisy.
I like the whoopsie daisy.
Yeah, whoopsie daisy. All right, on to the synopsis of the movie, courtesy of
IMDb.
IMDb.
All right.
Why'd you scare her off? Jealous?
You're changing, Seth. Everything about you is changing. You look bad. You smell bad.
Never been much of a bather.
Those weird hairs that were growing out of your back, I took them to a lab. I had them analyzed.
The hairs? The hairs? Oh. Yeah, that's a strange thing to do.
Not as strange as the results. The guy at the lab had trouble identifying them. He finally came to the conclusion that they were definitely not human.
Oh, very good.
Not human, Seth. In fact, very likely insect hairs.
That's silly. That's ridiculous.
Look. Now there's more. Look at your face. Something happened when you went through, Seth. You've got to get some help. I think you must be sick.
You're jealous! I've become free. I've been released, and you can't stand it. You'll do anything to bring me down. Look at me. Does this look sick? Does this look like a sick man to you?
No! Stop it!
You know any sick men who can do that? Come here.
Help! Seth!
Heels off! I don't need you anymore.
No, wait! Seth, please! Wait! Seth!
Don't come back!
All right, Seth Brundle is a brilliant and eccentric inventor. At a party thrown by his financier, Bartok Industries, for the press, Brundle meets Veronica Queef, a reporter of This is me speaking. Thank you. A reporter from a particle magazine. He invites her to come back to his apartment, where he shows her his latest invention, teleporter pods.
Sweet.
Or telepods. Oh. That disintegrate matter, transmit it across space, and then reintegrate it.
Okay, stop right there.
Okay.
This movie doesn't waste any time.
No, not at all. No, which is great. I'm glad.
Like, when this thing starts up, he's literally talking to Veronica at the party, like, I got something to show you. Greatest invention ever in the world. And she's like...
2 minutes later.
Yeah.
His apartment.
Which, by the way...
What are we seeing? Oh,
sketchy?
You've already seen him.
Yeah. You go up to this guy's apartment. As you're going up the elevator, and you see that this isn't a sterile environment. This guy's a scientist, and he opens up the door, those classic elevator doors from the 80s, and it's like, you know, and you're like, this is just his place, and I see all sorts of weird things, big things hanging around.
It's also a warehouse in an industrial district.
I need to get the hell out of here.
It's not an apartment. There's not another people around.
And Gina Davis, kind of hot.
Oh, yeah.
She's kind of hot in this film. Gina Davis, she's very underratedly hot. It's kind of funny seeing her with Jeff Goldblum, because he's not exactly your typical James Bond type, if you will.
No.
No. He's not even like, for a scientist in Hollywood, not even that good looking.
I mean, what was the turnaround? Jurassic Park?
When he had his shirt unbuttoned, two or three buttons. Yeah, that's all it was.
All right. She realizes that it could be invention of the century, and over Seth's objections, goes to her boss and ex-lover, Stathis Brorens. All I want to do is say Stathis Baratheon to convince him to publish a story.
Now, stop. We forgot something here, and that is when he says, give me something personal. And she pulls off her stocking.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This woman is ready to go.
She doesn't wear jewelry.
She is DTF.
She doesn't wear jewelry.
Now we meet Stathis.
Yes.
Stathis is the biggest asshole of the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, everybody thinks, no, it's Johnny from Karate Kid.
No.
Johnny Wishes. Everybody thinks it's...
No, I'm sorry. Pause.
Yes.
You know what? Johnny was your average high school student.
Are you going to defend Johnny right now?
With the dream girl on his way to success.
Sweet delight, Johnny!
When some freaking Jersey Italian rat comes into his town, steals his girl, and embarrasses him... in front of all people.
You
just need to listen to Patton Oswalt.
You went after a guy in a shower.
Listen to Patton Oswalt's story about that. It's fantastic.
But Stathis Brorens, like, I thought I'd seen like the biggest dicks in Hollywood as actors, if you will. Like, you have Johnny, he's portrayed as one. You have the guy from Die Hard, the reporter from Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Total asshole.
Stathis
is every awful thing. In fact, this is why this movie translates so well. He is the most misogynistic human being on the planet. And you're sitting there going, why is she sticking around this guy? Oh, it's his boss. Oh, it's her boss,
boss.
Tell us about Borens.
Borens is uninterested, believing the whole thing is a magic trick and he's a con artist. Brundle comes to see her at work and is relieved that Stathis didn't want to publish the story because his telepods are not ready to be made public yet. Although they can transmit inanimate matter, it can't handle living things yet. He offers to let Veronica track his progress as he tries to work out the kinks if she will wait to write the story until he is finished. She agrees.
There is no courtship here, by the way. No. But right away, they're getting busy. Listen, if I could find a girl this hot who is that interested in my mind, by all means, thank you.
Veronica ends up spending much of her time at Seth's apartment while he works, and the two of them become more and more attracted to each other. He attempts to send a baboon. He attempts to send a baboon through the telepods, but it is reintegrated inside out.
This is freaking disgusting.
I hated the scene.
It's the baboon inside out. It took me a while to figure out where the mouth was and all that stuff, but when it first happens,
I kind of wish the bloody hand.
Yeah, and that's all. But when they actually show it to you, you're like, oh, it's that kind of movie. Yeah, but even better.
Galaxy Quest.
She sticks around.
Oh, yeah. No, like, she's like,
well, you murdered a baboon. But you know what?
Keep trying.
It's the bug eyes. I'm kind of digging them.
Shit.
Soon Veronica falls in love with Seth, and they make love.
What the fuck?
Hey there, children. You know how to make love.
Offers a lot of track and
during the act, she makes an offhand remark about the flesh driving women crazy.
Shut up. We're going to switch back to mornings. Soon, Veronica falls in love with Seth, and they make love.
Yeah, baby.
During the act, she makes an offhand remark about the flesh.
Groovy.
Driving women crazy.
Wait up, girls. I got a salami I gotta hide still.
This gives Seth the inspiration he needs and will teach the computer to be driven crazy by flesh.
Yes! Which, how do you, like, he just starts typing away, like, yeah. I know how to do this.
Yeah.
It's those 80s computers that could just do everything, and here we are 30 years later, and they still can't fucking boot up.
Seth continues to work on the telepods while Veronica goes shopping for a gift for him. While shopping, she runs into the scumbag himself, Stannis. Again, who now believes that Seth's project is genuine and should be published. For his own personal gain, by the way.
Yes. Doesn't he slip the envelope under the...
No, he slips up, like, the cover of his story.
Right.
His name is there.
It's not hers.
Not hers.
Yeah.
Like, what's your story is my story, baby.
Yeah, you work here, therefore it's all us.
It's all me.
What a prick. You weren't interested. You said it was a magic trick, you asshole.
No, well, I decided to trust your journalistic skills. Back at Seth's apartment, Veronica watches as Seth puts a second baboon through the telepods, and this time the baboon comes through unharmed.
Awesome!
As they prepare to celebrate, however, Veronica finds a package, referenced 5 seconds ago, from Stathis. Inside is a design and a cover story of Seth. She runs back to the office to stop him from publishing prematurely, probably a lot of things prematurely, and then leaving Seth to celebrate alone. He gets drunk and becomes convinced that Veronica is resuming her relationship with Stathis. He decided to teleport himself as a way to spite Veronica.
Ugh.
If he just calmed down for...
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
However, a housefly inadvertently gets into the telepod with him, teleports to the other pod, and emerges seemingly normal.
You blew it!
Veronica comes back to him that night, and they reconcile. They reconcile, but his journey through the telepods begins to show some strange side effects.
Uh-oh.
Thick, coarse hairs begin to grow on his back.
Yeah.
Which look real gross.
They look really good. They look really good, though.
They look really good.
And the I love it when she rubs her hands on it and he kind of shivers a little bit. Like, they're so sensitive. And right, this is now. It's no longer Jeff Goldblum. Now you're watching an acting clinic of a fly. Doesn't he also get, like, really strong?
Yeah, we're going to get to
that. Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He develops an intense craving for sugar. His body develops an almost instantly more athletic build, and his sexual stamina is seemingly endless. Poor, poor Gina.
I know. What a rough time she's going to have.
Well, what was her?
I had an awesome time.
That was her. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, dude is super strong.
Oh, yes. He's doing gymnastics.
I'm super jealous. Like, all sorts of calisthenics. Like, stuff that I do in the gym, and I'm nowhere near that.
No, No. And apparently...
Goals.
Yeah, this was none of Jeff Goldblum. He wasn't doing any of that stuff.
So whoever was...
Dude looked ripped in this, though.
Jeff Goldblum definitely looked ripped.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so back to the seemingly endless sexual stamina. The sex alone begins to wear out Veronica. Seth suddenly believes that Veronica should go through the teleportation herself, perhaps in a bid to make her as virile as himself. She refuses, and in a sudden burst of uncharacteristic anger, Seth leaves in search of a woman who he can throw in that damn telepod and teleport her.
Yes, this is where he meets Tawny. He gets pretty violent right away. Like,
it's pretty violent, pretty rapey, the whole thing.
He keeps calling it, the plasma pool.
You don't want to go into the plasma pool.
And come out victorious and stronger.
Stronger. It's like a coffee filter. Like, all the bad stuff is left behind, and only the pure has gone through. At a seedy bar, he meets a woman named Tawny. An arm wrestles with another man to compete over who gets to take her home. She goes with him really willingly.
Well, she starts off going, hey, you can't bet me. And that's well, the
and
other
then
guy-
she snaps dude's arm.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Seth wins by breaking the other man's arm with his superhuman strength and because of the white secretion from his hands.
Go ahead and run. Run home and cry to mama.
After a night of sex and demonstration of his invention, Tawny pours champagne on his skin, which severely irritates him.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't like that.
No. Sea cucumber. Sea cucumber.
Sea cucumber.
Sea cucumber! He then tries to get her through the telepods, but she refuses. Seth tells her not be afraid, but at that moment, Veronica arrives saying, be afraid. Be very afraid.
Which ended up being the tagline for the poster.
True. And lyrics for some songs. Good stuff.
Yes, it is.
Tawny leaves and Veronica confronts Seth about the changes she has seen in him. Very calm about how he just had relations with her.
Yeah.
And they're still together.
Calm. And also, knowing that she carries this information, by the way, you would think that she'd be like, you listen, you're a fly, ass. Hillbilly.
You're a fly, you ass. I wish that would have been great. They should have written that in this
way. Oh, God.
Tawny leaves and Veronica confronts Seth about the changes she has seen in him. Not only is his back growing more hairs, but his face is breaking out in blisters.
Doesn't look good.
No, he starts.
That is nasty.
He does start.
Yeah. Hygiene needs a little work.
She then informs him that she had some of the back hairs that she trimmed off, which. Ooh, those scissors and.
They were coarse.
They're real coarse.
Those some coarse. That wasn't the hair that I have coming out of my face. That was elephant hair. Insect. No.
She had the black hairs analyzed and that they're most likely insect hairs.
Son of a bitch.
Seth refuses to believe anything is wrong with him and kicks Veronica to the curb. This thought process having become more scattered and irrational. In the bathroom later on, though, Seth does notice more severe changes in himself. God, this is just... This is the part that got me. His fingernails are falling... He's not falling off. He's literally just pinching them in his teeth and pulling them off with ease.
And then squeezing
this pus fluid out of his fingers.
Oh, that was the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life. Let's go.
His face has more blisters and more of the thick hairs are growing. He concludes, like Veronica, that something must have gone wrong when he went through the telepod. He checks the record of his teleportation, and the computer tells him there was a secondary element in the pod with him, which he recognizes as a housefly. God, that's got to suck.
Well, imagine sitting there going, okay, something went wrong with this experiment I'm working on for the last 4 or 5 years, and then you realize that the one time you went through...
A fly.
Damn little fly did too. How come this never happened beforehand? It's not like his house looks sanitary at all. it's a convenient premise that works for the film.
Yeah.
But the look on his face as he's typing and it pulls out in the picture to be the fly, that's when he's like, okay, I got to fix this.
Yeah. No light bulb.
Yeah, like, it had to be done through science. It couldn't be everybody else telling him. It had to be through the one thing that he trusts.
Yeah.
I don't like, however, how this thing pulls up the picture of the fly. It's like, really? Like, what kind of computer is this thing? This is like the computer from Aliens, where it's just, it'll give you whatever you want.
Whatever you want. Yeah, great.
Yeah, this was not mech powered.
I can't get, you know, a website to render a font, you know, one color, but he can get, you know, DNA tracked all the way to a fly and a picture of said fly in the 80s.
It's, yeah.
Don't you have some kind of a line that you keep open for emergencies or for celebrities? I'm both. I'm a celebrity in an emergency.
That's how it works.
When he asks the computer what happened to the fly, it tells him that he and the fly have been spliced together at a genetic and molecular level. Whoa. Into a single organism.
And audiences everywhere went, well, that's new language.
Ooh.
Imagine the first time you heard DNA on the big screen. You were like, hell is that? Old Diana.
A month goes by in which Seth and Veronica do not speak. I thought it was 4 months. Mm.
I don't remember.
But finally he contacts her and asks her to see him. When she arrives, she sees that he is frightened and heavily deteriorating.
You look like a blueberry.
He
looks
He looks like a raisin.
An old blueberry.
An old withered, raisiny blueberry.
He comes around the corner with the stilts.
Yeah. You immediately like have so much
compassion
for this guy.
What the hell happened to you?
Yeah. Veronica goes to stand and hoping the way to find it. Where was I? Here we go. When she arrives, she sees him frightened and heavily deteriorating. His face is lined with pock marks, and he needs canes to walk. He has to wear gloves to keep from biting his fingernails off. He eats by vomiting corrosive enzymes onto his food and sucking up the dissolved remains.
I don't think so.
As they talk, his ear falls off, which is great.
That's gross.
That's gross. Look, behind the mirror, it's become a genetic...
The Museum of Brundle.
You want to see what else is behind the mirror?
This is practical effects at its finest.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
The budget was used very well.
So well.
He refuses to take help from any professional doctors, not wanting to be a lab rat. Veronica goes to Stathis, who hoping to find some way to help Seth. He warns her not to go back to him, fearing contagion, but then he asks to go ahead and visit him again to document what is happening, so Stathis can see and find a way to help. She returns to his apartment to find him crawling on the walls and ceiling. Doesn't need a cane anymore.
Nope.
As now realizes what is happening, he is turning into a human-fly hybrid he calls the Brundlefly. And wants Veronica to document this metamorphosis for the kids, just for the children.
Yeah. So, you know, they can learn, too, from Brundlefly.
This is one thing I didn't understand about the film.
Yes.
Like, I understand that, like, a fly's lifespan is extremely short. So I actually thought that he was going to, like, this was going to be, like, the last stage of being a human.
Okay.
And then die, and then his husk would open up into a fly.
Right.
Instead, I don't get the old man part.
Well, I get it. Here's why I get it. I get it because he's no longer... Because when he comes off the wall, he is still hunched over. He's not standing up straight anymore. The gravity of his body can't hold with his legs any longer. So he's got those sticks on there. He hasn't learned how to walk on the walls yet. Because if you're walking on the walls, your gravity is now displaced.
Yeah.
But he also, as that's deteriorating, I think they have to find a way to get it so that he can kind of jump still like flies do. I do think that the canes were used too soon. They probably should have held off until the final shot.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And I would have liked to have seen something. The thing, wait, lift up your shirt. What is this? I don't know. You know, I would have liked to see those turn into legs popping out. Yeah, which we get in the final iteration of it, but these are things that I mean, we're nitpicking a phenomenal special effects gradual deterioration here. And you're right. I think the weakness of him, it's, I want to say, inconsistent. Because at the one time, he's horrified. The next minute, he's like, let's do something for the children. It's like,
very, you know,
where are you at,
very irrational.
You're not going to charm this girl back into your bed. It's not not like this. You got throw up on your shirt. Clean yourself
up. Your ear fell off.
Clean yourself off, man.
She records a video where Brundle demonstrates his new eating habits and brings it to Stathis. Joe's favorite scene. He watches it in horror as he slurps up.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
This is not the way you want to eat things.
No.
No, it's a donut. It's a powdered donut, isn't
right,
it? Yeah.
It's a whole tray of them. Veronica then shocks Stathis further by telling him she's pregnant with Brundle's child.
Now, let's not get into a political argument here. This is a case for abortion, I think. I don't think you sit there going, no, she should be, you know, pro-life on this one.
Pro-life on this one.
This is a little different. A little different. You're saying no, let her deliver the maggot?
Hey.
Sorry.
Life's a life.
Oh, and that little maggot.
You got to choose life, Joe.
Funny thing about that, actually, is at the end of this movie, there's a scene that they cut out. And it's her in bed with Stathis. They're sleeping together now. They're back together because he's such a wonderful, charming man.
That's real bad. I'm glad they left that out.
And she has a dream that is a dream of her fetus. And it's in a cocoon inside of her. And it cracks open, and the baby has butterfly wings. And it flies off. Aren't you glad that wasn't in there?
I'm really glad it wasn't in there because of Stathis, but that makes more sense for leaving it open for Fly 2.
Yes.
Where it's just like the cocoon just then fade to black. Come on, Joe. You can't let a woman like make her own decision about her body and the baby that she's carrying. Pro-life.
I had an awesome time.
I had a great time.
Oh my gosh. Does that suck?
Big time. Big time. All right, Stathis encouraged her to talk to Seth before aborting the baby.
What the hell is he going to say?
I don't know why she listens to this guy at all. He's literally the most disgusting, misogynistic prick I've ever seen in a film.
Does other friends? None.
That's the guy.
We couldn't have, like, I'm going to you because, well, the studio couldn't afford anybody else, like Deadpool?
Probably. That's probably where they sunk in all the special effects.
Yeah, like... Why can't I go to the X-Mansion? The only two people here are you two. Couldn't afford anybody else.
Guess I couldn't afford any other X-Men. Huh. When she sees him again, he is deteriorating even further. He no longer wears clothing. His skin has become swollen and lumpy, and more of his body parts have fallen off, and he barely resembles his old self. He keeps the sloughed off parts in a cabinet, dubbing it the Brundle Museum of Natural History. Now, this is a point where his teeth have fallen out.
Yes.
And God, it's just the worst things being displayed. But yeah.
And he takes it so well.
No, he's taking it. That's the best part. It's like, I laugh because it's like, you know what? In that situation, I'm glad he has some, he has a sense of humor. He's like, hey, check this out. This is the Brundle Museum of Natural History. You want to see what else is behind it?
Here's an ear.
He warns Veronica not to return because the fly instincts are taking over.
Was his dick in there?
Dude, I was wondering what that was. I know exactly what you're talking
about. Exactly, because I thought that was his dick.
I thought it was a thumb.
I thought it was his dick. Because his hands have changed also.
Yeah, he's gotten like one giant melded finger in the middle, but I saw that and I was like, I don't think he's missing any fingers. What could that be? Tongue?
He's walking around in the nude and I don't see anything swinging. I think his dick fell off.
His dick fell off!
No more shenanigans, no more tomfoolery, no more ballyhoo.
He warns Veronica not to return because his fly sticks are taking over. Have you ever heard of, in check politics.
You do that well, man.
She tells him, she leaves without telling him she is pregnant and demands Stathis take her to the doctor for an immediate abortion. Yes. Seth overhears them talking, however, and follows them to the doctor's office, where he kidnaps her and takes her back home, asking her to have the baby, as it may be the only thing left of his humanity.
Ugh. And it's hard to watch this thing.
It's
this is
really hard.
Because you're sitting there watching. What I love about this movie is that it is not just a horror movie. It has so many different elements to it. And this scene is truly like a man and a woman who are, they realize they cannot fight what is happening. And he is pleading with her, although I love you, you got to get out of here because I can't control this inside me any longer. And I've heard people compare this to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but those were two separate entities within a personality.
Yeah.
This is one being taken melded. Over. And as I watch this, I mean, I love the fact that he references Metamorphosis from Kafka, which is a great book. If you ever see that or read that book, it's amazing. But this is a hard watch, this scene, because you're like, he can't do anything else but have a good smile on his face at this point because he's screwed. What I don't get, though, is that how come this guy who is all about I trust science just refuses to get any outside help when your circumstances are this dire? Like, at some point, you got to go, yeah, I'm going to put away my ego for a second because my ear fell off or my dick is in the medicine cabinet now. This could be an issue.
Yeah, but at the same time, from his perspective of what he's done to lab rats and what he's done to baboons, he doesn't want to do.
Okay.
He wants to, he's accepted it. And it's also probably part of his brain being morphed and changed.
The survival instinct.
The survival instinct where you can't trust an insect. Well, you can't trust anybody else.
Right.
It's the insect politics that happened previous scene.
And I love it. He's like, insects are brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't think of them that way because it's a fly.
No,
you're like, I'll swat that
little
shit.
Things, but
if you were that small, it would scare
things,
the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
See, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, there's certain bugs that have, not empathy, but just a general for the colony mentality.
Ants.
That's about it.
Bees.
Yeah.
Wasps.
Any, like, in that...
Hornets.
Yes, in the family. Yes, in the bee family and the ants.
Yeah.
But if...
Flies don't.
And then beetles, spiders, yeah. Anything else.
Scavenger insects. Let's call that. Yeah,
scavenger insects. It's just them.
Mm-hmm.
A great scene is from the Brothers Grimm when all the... It reminds me, just, like, if you pull up a stone, there's a ton of bugs.
Mm-hmm.
It's... scatter and like they'll walk all over each other.
Okay, yeah.
There's no empathy or control. There's no politics at all.
They're just moving around trying to get through.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no roads.
We don't where they're going.
They don't need roads. You don't know where you are, do you?
She overhears them telling the kid, Veronica's too frightened, thinking there's some kind of monster going inside her.
I would be too. I just shot a scene.
Well, she also had that
while
freaking,
he was fly.
She had that dream about the larva coming out of her.
Well, did she have the dream yet?
Yeah.
Did she?
Yeah.
Did I miss it? Or did we talk about it?
I think you missed it.
I think I missed it.
Or at least it hasn't popped up here, but it happened in the movie prior to him grabbing her.
Yeah, I'm looking here, and I don't see it anywhere in the synopsis here. But yeah, should we talk about the dream? It just seems like a real scene,
honestly,
actually.
I thought it was a real scene.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
And when it's great because... It cuts right from her leaving his house with Stathis to the hospital shot.
Yeah.
So maybe it's right in that spot right there after she leaves his place.
Yep.
That's when she has this scene in there, and it's horrifying.
Oh, it's really bad. And then the larva comes, and that's when I lose it.
Twitching.
That's when it lost me. I laughed.
it's so ridiculous at that point. You're like, okay, I get what they're trying to do. At the time,
I really wish you should. Like,
if you're a woman, that probably scares the shit out of you.
Oh no, absolutely! Like any alien movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just would have been better if they had just, you just heard the sounds, and then you saw Gina screaming.
Yeah.
And that then was, she woke up.
That was actually the trailer for The Fly 2. The Fly 2 was a heart monitor going across, and all you heard was you heard the scene in the background, and the heart monitor goes, and it starts going, and then you hear the scream, The Fly 2, and you're like, the maggot grew up. Oh, wait, that was a dream.
Stathis follows them to the Seth's apartment, armed with a freaking elephant gun shotgun.
Yeah.
So he's
packing.
He's not just a scumbag, but he is a trophy hunting scumbag.
Mind you, he was there to talk to him.
Talk, yes. Go to talk.
Yeah.
But Seth jumps down from the skylight, catching Stathis by surprise. Seeing that Stathis means to shoot him, Seth defends himself by vomiting his digestive enzyme on Stathis' left hand and right foot, melting both appendages and sending Stathis into a state of semi-conscious shock. Oh, this scene was so freaking cool!
Indiana Jones is Raiders of the Lost Ark and the melting of the face.
Yes, and the melting white bone.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
This is awesome and so gross.
When Stathis, to that actor, Stathis...
I actually feel bad for the character at this point.
I thought he was going to take all his limbs.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
Like complete.
Like just make him like a torso.
Just make him a plaything like a spider.
Yeah.
The hand didn't get me. It was the foot.
When he goes in the leg?
When it's literally to the leg, and then you literally just see it cave in and melt away. It's like, oh, there goes his right foot. Where's it going next? His left and then his left hand?
What's
right
up,
hand?
Stumps?
Oof.
Yeah, this is pretty cool to see, because this is where he fully transforms.
Yes.
Doesn't it? Because he goes in there, his suit... Oh, his face hasn't pulled off yet. Gina's got to show up first for his face to pull off. Okay.
He's about to vomit on Stathis' face and make him a meal when Veronica, who Seth had kept on the roof, intervenes. Seth lets Stathis live. How life is...
I know.
But asks for Veronica's help to make him human again.
Hope you like to be touched when with a hook.
When she... Yeah. When she asks... Hope you like being a pirate for Halloween every year. When she asks him to explain, he shows her the plan he's created. He wants to use the telepods as a gene splicer yet again, using them to fuse himself with Veronica and the unborn child. This is sick.
Well, it's also, this is...
I thought he was going to grab dude, throw...
This is the conclusion he comes up with on the computer, though, that he can't get rid of the fly. Instead, he has to make himself more human. And, okay, there's two humans readily available right there. The fly's taking over, saying, do it, man. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of ironic that the fly survival instinct is what's going to eventually push it out completely. I don't know. But what happens next? We'll be the ultimate family.
Yep, we'll be the ultimate family.
4-1.
Veronica resists, but Seth tries to force her into it, saying, we'll be the ultimate family. As he struggles to free her, Seth... Sorry, this scene is great.
Yeah.
As she struggles to free herself from Seth's grip, she accidentally rips off his jaw, which sparks the final stages of Seth's transformation. His limbs shed, the remainder of his human skin revealing the insect body and head underneath. The rest of his face sloughs off to reveal a fly's head.
And now we get a problem for me. And the problem I have is, this is why at some point you have to abandon practical effects and go with computer generated. Because this fly should move as fast as everything else. But because it's puppetry, it's going to move slower. And this is the only problem I have with this film. Well, it's not the only one, but it's one of the big ones, is that when it gets to that point, you shouldn't even be able to run away from this thing. It's jumping everywhere.
Yeah.
And it should have wings. Where's the wings? I want the wings.
Well, you know, it's a splice between a human and a fly. It's not a complete fly, but
I love its proboscis, though. It keeps shaking. So cool. It's scary looking, though.
Oh,
but it moves like the queen from Aliens, and you're like, I could easily run away from this. Yeah. I could walk away from it.
The now completely transformed Run to Fly throws Veronica into one pod, activates the computer, and steps into the other. As the cooldown to teleportation ticks away, the wounded Stathis comes to his senses. With some effort, he uses the shotgun to shoot the cables connecting Veronica's telepod to the computer.
Hell of a shot for having one arm.
Hell of a shot. And one foot.
Yes.
Forcing it offline and ensuing Veronica's safety. The Brundlefly smashed... The Brundlefly.
It's just the fly now. The fly. It's not even Brundlefly anymore.
The fly smashes the door to its telepod and attempts to escape, but the teleportation sequence begins as it is halfway out of the telepod. In a flash, a section of the telepod is transported to the third pod with Brundlefly, causing a shower of sparks. This part makes no sense. No reason telepod would teleport anything outside of the telepod.
Well, that's why the door was closed. The door was closed to do that because it would keep all the energy on the inside. When the energy is outside, it can't go outside the glass. So, yay for leaps of faith.
Yeah, whatever.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Stathis manages to crawl to Veronica's pod and let her out. The computer, in the meantime, fuses Brundlefly with a section of the telepod that it took. The receiving pod door opens and the fly collapses on the floor. As a result of the fusion, most of its body is now mangled, twisted mass of flesh machinery.
I am...
Oh my god, the sorrow I feel for Brundle at this point.
Yeah, like, everything he has tried since turning into the fly has gotten worse.
And worse.
Always fascinated when I see things on TV or in movies where they have to find a way to meld the machinery into the person or the... some kind of mutation like this. This looks so great. And as I was watching, I was like, where would Goldblum fit in that costume? Where would a little person fit in that costume? I have no idea, but it moves so well. And when it's pulling itself out of the machine and you just see that chunks of the previous machine following it. Oh God. You're right. This is hard. Cause you're like,
I
feel
don't know
bad.
I
so
don't know
bad for this guy.
Like, I don't know if it's a costume or a puppet.
Yeah.
Either way, you've managed to make it look so sad and in so much pain.
The only thing I can think of where I felt the same emotion for this as I did for another puppet is Yoda. Yoda is a puppet, and for some reason, you don't even buy it's a puppet anymore.
No.
This scene, you don't buy it's that, especially with this next part that's going to come up.
Brundlefly crawls toward Veronica, who arms herself with Stathis' shotgun. Rather than try to harm her, however, Brundlefly uses a claw to point the shotgun directly at its own head.
Oh my god.
Yeah, silently asking Veronica to end his life. She is unable to do it at first. Bullshit.
I was going to say, you pull that trigger.
You pull that fucking trigger. She's unable to at first, but seeing that the creature, which used to be her lover, has been horribly deformed and is in excruciating pain, she gains enough strength to pull the trigger. And that's how the movie ends.
Yeah, that's it.
She blows his head off.
Cut.
She blows his head off. She sobs and then literally goes black in a matter of 2 seconds. It literally, bang, black.
It starts as abruptly as it finishes.
Yes, exactly.
And I have to wonder why that choice was made. But when you realize that there was this cutscene afterwards and you didn't want to include it, that would have been the end of the movie.
That would have been the ending.
Yeah. Okay, did the awards get it right? Well, best makeup at the Academy Awards, it won for that.
Absolutely.
And it beat Clan of the Cave Bar in Legend, actually, with Tim Curry as the devil. Oh. Yeah.
The movie was really good, but the makeup for the fly.
Better.
The fingernails, the teeth, the dick in the pantry.
Didn't do anything at the Golden Globe, but at the Saturn Awards, our new favorite awards, Jeff Goldblum won for Best Actor. He beat Anthony Perkins for Psycho 3, which nobody saw, Leonard Nimoy for Star Trek 4, which is one of the worst ones, Michael Biehn for Aliens, and he's pretty badass, and William Shatner for Star Trek 4. So, good job, Jeff Goldblum. You should have won that one anyway.
Yep.
Best Actress went to Sigourney Weaver of Aliens, and I got to agree with that one.
Yep, have to.
Yeah. The other ones on there, Gina Davis was nominated for that, but Sigourney Weaver, she's an icon. Best Director, James Cameron for Aliens. I would say of the list here, which was Short Circuit, Flight of the Navigator, The Fly, and Star Trek IV, if Aliens wasn't there, The Fly is winning this one. Best horror film, The Fly won. Now I have a issue. Ugh. The Fly is, yes, a horror film, but it is so many other types of films. Little Shop of Horrors is a musical. Psycho 3 is a horror. From Beyond is a horror. And Poltergeist 2 is so underrated. I did rewatch it this last week. It is really good.
You literally changed.
I shit on it.
You've changed your opinion 360 on that movie.
I shit on that the last time, but wow, Poltergeist 2 is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watch these, you know what? The Fly is the most disgusting. Poltergeist 2, I think, probably should have won. But best makeup?
For overall best horror film, yeah. You think Poltergeist 2 should have won?
Yes.
With characters, story, effects.
It hurts.
Direction.
Maybe. Mm. It's a tie.
All right.
Okay, best makeup, The Fly won. Beat out Aliens. What makeup was in Aliens? It was all special effects.
There was newts, mud, and probably shit stains, but...
Best music? I have to agree. Little Shop of Horrors wins this one.
Oh, what? Big Trouble, Little China didn't win?
Can you even think of the music that was in that movie?
Yes, I can, because I watched that movie.
It's amazing,
isn't it? It's amazing.
Yes, but Little Shop of Horrors...
It's not a horror, it's just a musical.
It's best music. A musical's going to win that.
Yeah, never mind. Sorry, I was thinking sci-fi horror. That was... Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, and Little Shop of Horrors is one of... It's my favorite musical of all time. It's Rick Moranis at his finest. Outside of Dark Comet, of course.
And
okay.
You can't wait for the new one, can you?
The new what?
Little Shop of Horrors. Or did it already come out?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. They're making a remake of this movie?
Hold on. Yes.
Please don't tell me that. This movie... Stop remaking Rick Moranis movies!
Shop.
You did Ghostbusters. Now you're doing this. Stop it. Stop. If Mel Brooks does Spaceballs, you better have an icon of Dark Helmet in there. Like this. I don't like this at all.
Remake. Their remake is eyeing Josh Gad and Rebel Wilson. Doesn't that just make you so happy?
Erroneous. Erroneous. Erroneous on both counts.
I can't stand Rebel Wilson.
I can't stand Josh Gad and Rebel Wilson.
Josh Gad? Who's Josh Gad?
Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. I'm sorry, not Gaston. The little guy. You see him, you're like, oh, him. Olaf!
Here's the thing.
From
Frozen. He's perfect.
For who?
For the main character.
There is no one more perfect than Rick
Moranis. Okay, yes.
Moranis.
You are right. There's nobody better. But if they're going to remake this movie...
No, Boba Fett's iconic.
Why you gotta bring up Boba Fett? We're not talking about Boba Fett.
I know, it's me defending that. No, Rick Moranis is iconic.
He is.
I know.
Yeah.
It's
Boba Fett.
How is anybody supposed to know that?
By watching the film.
Why?
Rebel Wilson, I'm sure she's a great girl.
Oh, it's so good.
That's not appropriate at all. That's highly inappropriate.
Well, I have the soundboard, so you're going to hear every damn thing I have to play.
Well, you're a dick. Well, how about this? It's happening. Josh Gad and Rebel Wilson, Little Shop of Horrors.
You know, Lloyd, just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally be yourself.
Okay, what are we going on next?
Beck, what did you think about watching this film?
Still creepy as hell. It held up better than I thought it would. It'd been a while since I seen The Fly. It's still awesome.
For 1986, this movie is gross, and the effects are amazing for its age. Like 1986, I was not expecting that.
The special effects here are on par with Aliens.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and on a much smaller budget.
Yeah.
All right.
On to our next segment, titled Top 3, Bottom 3. This is where we pick our top 3 things we love or scenes we like in the movie, and then we choose the 3 things we dislike about the film and or that we find the weakest. Let's start with the top 3. Joe, what are your top 3 things that you want to highlight in this movie?
Well, my number 3 is self-explanatory. It's the special effects. They're so good. Every special effect in this movie is good. There isn't a chink in the armor that you can really find. The only thing I found was that, you know, you had the puppet at the end. That's it. But at the time, that's what you had to work with. And you know what? It still works. My number two is the delivery of the maggot. I know that this is a sore spot for you, but I love this scene. It is awesome. The maggot still looks good. It still moves like a maggot. Yes. And it's got the black head, and it's wiggling around. Shit.
It looks like a larva.
It does.
It doesn't look like, as much as I don't like, I would have preferred it not to be shown.
Yes.
It being shown, it looks real.
Yeah.
It looks like a larva.
And my number one is, this movie's a callback to how horror films like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist used to be. It's a slow drag compared to the scary movies today, which are built for people who get anxious when it's been 5 minutes and they haven't been scared yet. Psh, millennials. All right. What are your three?
All right. Kind of shimmying off.
I just saw what? Your bottom three.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't want you to read that yet, man, but okay. Flows very well, because you know it's true. Flows very well for a slow burn horror. I was not bored once, and I kept wondering how Brundle was feeling or what, like, where was his emotions and what was his thought process through this horrible metamorphosis.
Yeah.
Two is the effects are amazing. They stand up. How many years is that? 31 years.
Yeah. 32 years.
32 no, years.
It's 18 Damn. Now. So.
Yeah, that's right. Now my number one is how much remorse and sorrow I feel for that main character, especially at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Like when he's talking about, please don't abort the baby, like, please don't get rid of the baby. Like, this is the only, like, thing I have left to be a human. Like, that was bad. If it's human. But when he is just crawling on the ground, like, he's tried everything, and it's like, I'm in so much pain. Please just kill me. Just, even for a puppet, like, just the look in its eyes and its facial expressions.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do, and that's very uncommon in these kind of movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's move on to bottom three. Time to vent. Joe?
My number three is I wasn't a fan of the final product of The Fly. I want it to be more Fly-like. You're right, though. It's a mix of the two. It's supposed to be a mix of the two. It's fusion. It's not transformation. So that's a nitpicky thing right there. My number two is Geena Davis would have left this thing a long time ago. Sticking around, I get this is a Beauty and the Beast parallel, but at least you can pet Beast. Okay? Sure. And number one, we have a bigger asshole than the reporter from Die Hard. Stathis Borens is the biggest asshole in American cinema. What are your three?
All right, my number three... it's kind of, you know, it's the final product of The Fly reminded me of one of the Citadel bugs from Rick and Morty.
I like what you got.
Oh, my God. I'm a Sean. Tell my wife and kids I love them. They're just robots. I thought you said they're robots. They're bureaucrats. Same thing.
Well, this is where they get the ideas.
Yes.
80s horror.
They had to have got it because that bug looks exactly... Sorry, Rick and Morty Citadel, they no longer exist, but bugs...
it's just canon now.
It's canon now. But those bugs look exactly like Jeff Goldblum's Fly.
Yes.
And I was just crying laughing. Number two is the larva scene. I laughed. It took me out of it. It was just... it just went too far. It's just a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Still not a bad scene. And then number one is, what the fuck is up with that ending?
It was abrupt.
It was really abrupt. Joe, yep. Who is the audience for this movie?
Well, if you think Rosemary's Baby is a good horror movie and you like gross out special effects, this is the film for you. Sam?
You pretty much nailed it on the head.
Oh, cool.
I think this would be a good stepping... like, this would be a good toe in the water for Joel to watch Hostel.
The movie Hostel? H-O-S-T-E-L?
Yeah. Like, this is the pinky toe nail just dipping into the gross movie pool.
Okay, so... we're thinking, like, Hostel's, like, at least 7 or 8 steps away from this one, though.
This is, like... gymnastic leaps and pole vaulting.
Okay. And then Hostel would be like the Olympics. So he's got a ways to go before Hostel.
Ways to go.
Because
I don't ever.
I'm
think
pretty
I
sure
ever get him to watch. That
he
movie.
Will never see this movie.
I want him to.
Okay.
But yeah, no, Rosemary's Baby. That's pretty much good. It's just a gross Beauty and the Beast, slow burn, which just a lot of character development.
Yeah,
which is great. All right, to the critical rating movie report card.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what do you give this grade?
Okay. First, the cast is small. Gina Davis is really good as the female lead. The mighty flaw in this film is John Getz's character. John Getz is great as Stathis Borins, a perfect upside-down parallel to Seth Brundle. Brundle is kind on the inside, but is awful on the outside. Borins is handsome, but awful on the inside. You needed someone who could deliver the lines in such an awful way, and a character who had a history that has to stay around in the film. It was smart to make him her boss. He stays relevant in her life then. But the best in this film, obviously, is Jeff Goldblum. This is the movie that put him on the map. Nobody, and I mean nobody, could portray the fly better. Nobody can than Jeff Goldblum. When they give him a Life Achievement Award in 20 years at the Academy Awards, the fly will be a prominent clip in his montage.
Oh, it has to be.
This is one of the best updates to a movie I have ever seen. It took the original and made it better in every possible way. The only one I can think of in the 80s that did it as good a job was The Thing. The Thing did it to a 1950s movie also.
Really?
You didn't know that, did you?
I got homework to do. That's one
yes,
of my favorites.
Yes, you do. This is, okay. Dramas always age well. They always
they do.
Comedies age okay. Horror movies age horribly. Well done, Cronenberg. You've aged this thing for 32 years, and it still looks good. The special effects are so good. Last time we spoke about how some of the special effects from Poltergeist seemed dated. In this films, they are still very effective. It makes complete sense why this one has... This won so many visual effects awards for the transformation of Seth Brundle. I love it. You're looking at it right now, aren't you? The Thing.
The Thing from another world.
Yes. The threat of the film isn't the scene. It's the unseen, and it's unavoidable. The story is smart enough to gradually show the unseen until it's all you see. And to be clear, the threat isn't the fly. It's the insect's psychology that is taking over Brundle's psychology. The hero of the story is a partnership between the movie's antagonist, the movie's protagonist, and the movie's victim. It's the three. That's the hero. It's Brundle, Borins, and Quaif. They are the hero. Overall, in the horror genre, this may not be as strict horror as we're used to seeing. It falls under the umbrella of the horror genre. In the subgenres, sci-fi horror, romantic horror, body horror. However, it's a well-put-together movie that is above average. That being said, it starts and ends way too abruptly, and the relationship between Ronnie and Brundle seems to just appear out of nowhere. Because of those directorial choices and plot holes, I'm knocking this down to a B. It was an A when I first remembered it. But having seen my share of horror films now that are relevant to this genre, this isn't an A. I think it's a B. Sam, what do you think?
In some ways, I think this movie's more of a drama, and maybe that's why I like it more.
Yeah.
But as far as horror movies go, man, it is definitely above average.
Okay.
This is a solid B. It's just the endings overall and the abrupt start is the only thing that's holding this thing back.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's not a perfect movie, but it's by no means an average horror drama.
Do you like Cronenberg movies? Cronenberg. I'm going to pull up what he's done right now, but yeah. Cronenberg movies are notoriously disgusting.
I'm horrible with names.
I'm pulling it up right now real fast. David Cronenberg. Let's see. The Fly, Dead Ringers. Let's see. Videodrome. No. The Brood. No. yeah. He did a History of Violence. Did you see that?
I wasn't allowed to watch that, and I begged my dad to let me watch that movie because Aragorn was a badass.
Yes, he was.
Never saw it though.
Okay. Yeah. He's notorious for going a little step over the line sometimes.
Cool. I love that stuff. Do you give this movie, oh, hell yeah, sometimes, or you gotta be kidding me?
I'm gonna give this a sometimes. Sometimes I'm scared of this one. This is the horror factor. Sometimes this movie will get me in the parts of this movie where I'm like, I still jump. I always get weirded out when he first turns the corner and he's on the cane. And he's in the canes.
It's a really uncomfortable scene.
It's a jarring shot. And then, of course, when he leaps out of the final pod and he's half machine and half life, that part just gets me every time. Also, the baboon hand, poof, I guess that always gets me. And those little jump scares, when he jumps through the window as the fly, ah, here I am, you know, shit, wow, you got strong fast. So yeah, I'm a sometimes on this. Where are you?
I'm going to go with sometimes.
All right.
There wasn't really any jump scares for me particularly, mm-hmm. but it's like, I bite my fingernails.
Oh,
and I always have.
Yeah.
So that hits me right at home.
Okay.
And I always hated losing teeth as a kid. It was like, I loved pulling it, but the process, you know, maybe this is
unnatural.
It's everybody. I don't know, but I got a weird little teeth thing, and you know, it's my teeth and my fingernails, mm-hmm. both at the same time. So I'm gonna give this sometimes because that is just the worst.
Yeah.
When you lose a fingernail.
I've never lost a fingernail. I've lost a toenail, never a fingernail.
I worked at a concession stand over in the Franklin baseball field, and I fell or stumbled, and my hand went around to the cooler, and at that moment, one of the other coworkers just slammed the cooler door shut.
Oh, shit.
I thought he broke my finger.
That's
how hard
God.
That's how hard he slammed it. But whole nail gone.
That ain't good. Ugh.
Yep. So, fan rating.
Yes.
Now, let's get our critic hats off. Do you love this movie, like this movie, or none of the above?
I love this movie. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love the fact that I can't eat an ice cream flavor now because of this movie. Sam, how about you?
I thought this movie was just such a treat to watch. It was, yeah, I always love watching a good drama, horror in general, because it's just refreshing, because I feel there's a whole lot of garbage.
Yeah.
But it was just from, you know, pretty much from beginning to end, it was just a solid movie. It was just a treat to watch.
I have an idea for April Fools, for our shows. Let's do like really bad horror movies. Like Zombievers. Like
what's the worst?
Like Zombievers.
Hey, Bill Burr's in that movie.
Yes, he is. Well, that's all the time we've got for today, Movie Planeteers. Next show, we'll be looking at The Exorcism of Emily Rose for the Horror Film Pantheon. You can email the Movie Planet using the address movieplanetpodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Podbean and give us a 4 or 5 star review. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, and follow our Instagram. The opinions expressed on the Movie Planet podcast are those of the individual hosts. The Movie Planet podcast is not affiliated with, prepared for, approved, or licensed by any entity that created any films discussed, reviewed herein. All movie clips and music included in the podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They're included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Thanks for listening, and happy movie watching.